everyone, and what a surprise. We have been brewing something for you for quite a while now, and that is a new spin-off series of the Science Basement podcast, which we call Let's Talk About. The main focus of the series will be to take you on a journey through various topics related to the academic life of early career scientists. From master's to PhD and postdoc level, we all have encountered concerns and issues related to networking, finding a good PI to work with, and many, many more matters about our well-being. So this will be the focus of this spin-off series. And I would like to introduce you to my host or co-host for this spin-off series, Anastasia.
Hello.
Hello, Anastasia. How are you?
I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
just can hide it. Yeah, me too. It's amazing. It's something we've been thinking about for quite some time. So the excitement is indeed high, especially now that we come to realize it.
And honestly, these are the topics that have been bothering us for a while. Like, we've been going through these issues ourselves, and it's so nice to actually talk about them and maybe provide some kind of shortcut for other people who probably most likely will encounter them as well.
Indeed. And I know that there is so much that you can find right now on the internet if you Google to get advice or guidance. But we always, you know, sit down with friends. We have this casual conversation saying, oh, that happened to me now. And as you talk about these issues, you come to share experiences. And through these experiences, first, you learn that, A, you're not alone. And B, there's always light at the end of the tunnel. It just depends on the choices you will make. So the idea was that with this podcast, we have this more casual sit around the table and talk. I'm sorry. It's more about sharing experiences, and maybe this can help someone indeed.
And today we're drinking coffee, but maybe later on more heavier topics, we'll up this to wine or maybe some margaritas.
Yeah, although we do not endorse drinking alcohol to overcome these issues, right?
Yes, it's good to mention this.
So we introduced the podcast spin-off series, but we haven't introduced ourselves. And maybe our voices are a little bit familiar to those who have listened to our main episodes from the Science Basement podcast. But for those who do not know us yet, maybe let's start with a round of introductions. So Anastasia, would you like to go first?
Yes. Well, I have been a little bit of a co-host as of now, which is a big privilege for me. But Science Basement is very open, of course. But I am a student myself, a PhD student in biomedicine at the University of Helsinki. And I study mitochondria, the powerhouse of the cell, and the diseases that associate with them. And I really like talking, so be prepared for a lot of the blabbering here. But it is a podcast.
Yes, it is a podcast. And don't worry at all, I'm a blabber myself, if that's a word. And so we can both sidetrack each other, but also bring back each other on track. I'm Eleana. I am a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Helsinki. I study the sun and different solar phenomena, how they travel in the interplanetary space, and how they affect the terrestrial environment, but also human activity in space at different locations and also on the ground. I am talking a lot myself, usually about issues we encounter in our academic environment. I put well-being at the high importance level. And so in my department, I am the chair of the well-being now. And I'm trying to do everything to improve the community environment. But also now I want to openly discuss these matters with the broader community, not just the small department I'm part of. Oh, well, not a small department, but the smaller community. So without further ado, Let's discuss about today's episode, which focuses on how to decide which group to join in your academic career, whether you're a master's or a PhD student and you're looking for a supervisor, or you're a more a postdoctoral researcher who wants to join a PI's group. There's all these burning questions we have, like, and can be summarized in, like, how do I know whom to choose and if that is the best choice for me?
I mean, honestly, this is a puzzle every time, like for so many people. Yeah, I hope this will be useful.
Yes, I also hope that this will be useful for our audience. And I would like to start maybe with what is the first thing to consider when choosing our group or in the process of choosing a group. And that would be, what would you like to do, right?
Yeah. You need to start somewhere, yeah.
Yes. I mean, maybe your research topic is flexible, or maybe you have set your mind on something very specific. So that's where to start. And of course, that means different things in different fields. For example, in space physics and, my master's was in astronomy and astrophysics, and there's a large amount of topics one could be interested in. But I knew that my heart was set in focusing in what's happening in our solar system and particularly in the interplanetary space. So that helped me narrow down people within that area. But how is it in your field, Anastasia?
I think it's pretty much the same. Yeah, you can, the topic can be very broad. And of course, you could try to apply for everything. It's really up to you, but it will require a lot of time, of course. And you may end up having, even though it's this broad field, of course, yes, but within that field, you might end up going to something you don't particularly like. And I don't see really the point of going there just out of desperation.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't call it desperation, though, because I remember when I was applying for PhDs, there were not that many open positions at that time. And so I did broaden my topics a little bit, still within the area I was interested in or very closely related. But also, like, you know, it's good to have an idea of what you want to do, but also becoming a little bit flexible might work.
Exactly.
Because after all, what you bring is the general knowledge on a research field and then methodologies or techniques that you have been trained on, maybe at your bachelor's or your master's through special courses that can be applied. But step one would be always to think of what you really want. And if you have your heart set, then I agree, one shouldn't apply just for the sake of applying.
But yeah, I agree. I guess if the field you're working in is very broad, then it's better to narrow this down to some more specific topics. But if it's narrow on its own, if it's a very small community, then it's good to look outside the box and see where else it can be applied. Because you never know where they will take you and which one will have positions for you. It's one of the challenges as well. At which point will you actually be able to choose yourself and where you will have to go, because there is no other option.
And there are certain things one can think for choosing, at least, or starting to putting things in order for themselves. Because before you join a group, maybe you have never worked with that group before, or you don't know anyone from the group, so it's hard to know many things about them. So it's first that you have to define a few things that will help you make a choice, or will help your choice become easier later on. And that would be to first think, what do you want to achieve in your career, and try to put some short-term goals, but also long-term goals there.
Exactly. And this is also where comes the issue of the supervisor, because I believe that for your own growth, it's so important to have a supervisor that will support you that will teach you lots of things that you consider important for your future career, or maybe even some experiences that they encountered, and you can just like some unique experiences they encountered, and you can learn from them. But of course, not to be swayed too much by their reputation, because a big PI doesn't necessarily mean a very good PI.
That's true. Of course, it could mean that they are a good supervisor, but it also might be that they are always very busy, because the grander your name is, the more collaborations you have, the more projects to manage. So you definitely will have the funds to hire people, but at the same time, you might not have the time that a young researcher in training requires for their career growth. So it's good to find the balance. I know it's a very easy, I want to call it trap, although it's not really a trap, but it's a very easy concept to jump into. And that is, oh, that person is very well known, very famous in the field. So if I work with them, I launch myself in the center of the community. And, you know, that will skyrocket my career afterwards.
Which but
it's not always
true.
The case. It is often true, but it's not always the case. Because, as we said, someone who is famous or very known in the field might not have enough time to supervise you, but also might not be an optimal supervisor, in a sense that, you know, when you start your career, you need a supervisor who will also help you network, promote you, and they might not have the time to do it or the focus on you to help you in that direction, if that makes sense.
It does. And also, I would say maybe it depends partially on the structure that a supervisor PI establishes in their own lab, because they might not have time to manage all the projects by themselves, but they may assign postdocs that would mentor or supervise PhD students and master students. So in this structure, and many people don't know this layered structure, many people don't like this, but on the other hand, it does make the work more efficient, especially in a big group.
That is actually a very good point, because it doesn't depend only on which supervisor you want to work with, but also their group. And if the group is sufficiently large enough and it has also other senior researchers, what happens often is that you have a supervisor and a co-supervisor, and it might be that they both support you equally, or it might be that you might get more support from the second supervisor to some practical matters versus the first supervisor. It really depends. And that's why it's important to also consider the group dynamics when you join. So it's not just with which supervisor I want to work with, but which group I want to join.
Yes, and with my other supervisor, we also had this conversation, what is actually better, to have a big, very famous group, but where people are very selfish, you know, they mostly think about their own projects, or have a smaller one, maybe less famous, but where there's a true teamwork and people support each other or have better communication. And to me, it actually is more of the second case. Yes, we all want to have to publish big papers and have a big name behind us to raise us. But by the end of it, no project is done alone. And all throughout your career, you'll depend on people. So establishing these meaningful connections within the lab, establishing this nice workflow, and learning other people through them as well. Because if you're in good relations, they will introduce you to other fellow colleagues or friends. It will broaden your horizons, your professional horizons.
Yes, indeed, that's true. And I know many people might be concerned because in the years you are somewhere for a PhD or a doctoral research or even a master thesis. Okay, master thesis is fast, so things won't change that quickly. But for a PhD research, which can last anywhere from 3 to 5 years, depending on the country. And then postdoctorship can also be 2-3 years terms. For some people who are lucky, it might be longer. But within that time interval, what I'm trying to say is that the group might change because it's like a living organism, and it changes, and new people come in, some old people will leave, and you need to keep in mind that also in your selection. Namely, what I'm trying to say is that some people might be concerned that if I choose based on the group, and then midway of my PhD or postdoctoral research position, that group changes strongly because a project ended and half of the people then left. Will that affect me and my growth? But the idea is that if the group is good and well established, then the new people who will join will most likely be fitted to the group. So it's important to not let that be a worry, if that makes sense.
Yes. And just to add to the argument also of like big group versus small group, also maybe towards the bigger group advantage, at least in my field, bigger groups have so many projects going on that it's easier with them to share some of the data or some of the models for you to take with you when you want to establish your own group, for example. What I mean is that you may be working on development of a technique in your PhD or postdoc in that group. And of course, you spend a lot of time, you become an expert in this. And if it's a very versatile tool, you can apply this to many different things. So if a PI allows you to take this and establish a project based on it, of course, not too much overlapping with their ideas, it will significantly help you. When you apply for grants to open your own group, people are looking for not only the originality of your idea, but also for safety, how safe it is in execution. And so if you use something you've worked before, something that you already know, at the same time it's novel and interesting, they'll be more inclined to give you the funding than if it's just something completely novel and needs another 10 years to establish.
Yeah, although that is a topic also for another episode that we could make. It depends on the funding call, because some funding call says they want like high risk, high gain applications. So, but it also depends on the field. If the idea has a high risk, which means that you might not be able to carry it through in the given time, but if you do carry it through, then you will have a high gain. That means that funding institutions are highly probable to give the money to that project. But it's a good point to think, like what you said, the PIs, methodologies, practices, ideas, and also like your ideas going into the group if you have. I mean, it's not necessary that when you start a PhD, you come in with your own ideas and you say, I want to do that. You might be continuing in a group where you did your master thesis, and then a PhD is a natural continuation. But for me, I was just entering a whole new topic. So I had to do a lot of catch up, and I didn't yet have any ideas. So I needed the supervisor to guide me a bit more strongly, particularly at the beginning. But one thing we didn't mention is, like, we say, yes, look for all these things in a PI. So it's not just the reputation, but how they work, how the group looks. But then how do you know these things when you're not part of group already, or you don't have contacts right within that group?
Yeah, I guess talking to people who work in the lab is probably the best option you might have. But yeah, I know that in not on all labs or not in all groups you get to do this, but if you do, please use this opportunity as much as you can. And don't feel shy to ask them about the workflow, about the communication with the PI, how the routine goes, and maybe some recommendations or like what they like and dislike in this. And the more people you talk to, the more interesting insights you'll get and the better conclusion you can get from this.
That's true. Indeed. And you can always like send an email. Even if you don't go and meet the people from the lab in person, you can always send an email and say, I'm contacting you in confidence. I am considering joining the group and I would like to know how it really will be working in that environment, so that you get an idea of the work dynamics and then how it is working with a certain PR, with a certain supervisor. Who will supervise your PhD. If you know people who used to be in that lab or group and they have then progressed onto something else with inside or outside academia, I don't see any reason why not to drop them an email and say, oh, I am thinking about joining that group and I know that you worked with that supervisor PI before. Would you mind telling me how was your experience? And be specific, like ask specific questions. For example, you need to know what style of supervision they use. You would like to ask how present they are in supervising, like how often did you meet? And yeah, any specific question that comes in mind.
Just wonder how people would be willing to talk, for example, about some disadvantages, because when it's just in-person talk, it's off the record. You know, you can't really reference to what they said. But when it's an email, it's kind of a written copy that you can always refer to. So I guess you need to be very careful also in the questions you pick, like getting the same information, but via like a very nice, precise question. I don't know. What do you think?
I know, here? So if you ask, what kind of supervision did that PI provide? Then you might get an answer of, they let me explore my own ideas, or they were present enough. You need to look like, even if people are trying to be polite about someone, there are usually some keywords. Because for me, they were present enough means that they were there, but not quite there in supervising. So maybe someone would try to give an answer in a more diplomatic way, so it won't sound too harsh, but it could still give you an idea. But if there has been serious issues, I strongly endorse people to speak up about them. If there has been issues of harassment or bad experiences with supervisors, most universities, and I hope one day all universities will provide this kind of support where you can go. There are people in each department or faculty where you can approach and tell them that this has happened. And if it's a severe issue, then you can report it. And I know that people are still a bit uncomfortable or skeptical about reporting things because they don't know what will happen after. And they might feel like they will just expose themselves and put themselves in the spotlight, but no measure or caution will be taken. So I understand people being skeptical, but I can't highlight more how important it is to always report it. So I want to hope that if someone approaches me and I knew that the person they want to work with has not had the best reputation, then I would say he's an excellent or she's an excellent scientist, or they in general. So if someone approaches me and they tell me they want to work with a person who might have had been known for bad supervision or harassment, I will say be aware that they might not be the best fit for you. So I will not say specifically what has happened because that might be sensitive information, but I will try to caution in diplomatic manner. I don't see why you shouldn't try. Worst case scenario, you won't get the reply, the best reply, let's say, but contacting former members even by email might be useful. What you can do is also you can say, would you have time? Maybe we can Zoom, and then you can tell me.
Wow. I mean, even if the person from the lab agrees to Zoom, to me that would tell maybe the community is good because they are actually willing to spend that time on a potential new member.
Yes, because it shows also that they care for the people who will join the group or who might join the group. And so even if the PI might not be the best supervisor in the end, there will be someone in the group who will be there if you need, at least maybe not per se for the scientific aspect, but also for the scientific aspect. Why not? I would also ask things like, who else is working on this matter in the group? So is it going to be just me and the PI, or will I be able to get scientific support from another colleague? So then you know that you join a group, but you won't be alone in that group, because it can happen that you will join a group to start working on something that no one else is, and then you feel lonely in that group. So this is also something to consider. Is it only the PI working or not? But yeah, going back to the emailing, just...
Yeah, I think we swayed a little bit
yes,
too much into that topic. And of course, like, the harassment issue will be its own episode, because it really deserves more things to discuss. But I was just also thinking, what do you think about the prestige of the university? What would this matter to you, at least?
So I am tormented about it a little bit. I did my PhD at the University of Oulu. It's in the north of Finland. Not many people know the city or maybe the university, but my PI or my supervisor is a very prominent scientist in the field. And so I went for the PI and the research that he is doing rather than the university reputation. But I have seen that some universities which have a stronger reputation, they also tend to accumulate more funding, attract many prestigious scientists, and therefore they have a community that could boost. And so I'm not the best person to answer the question, in a sense. If I would go back in time, would I make a different choice? It's very hard for me to say, oh, I would go to that university instead because it had a better reputation, or that institute. So it's such a sensitive matter. But what would you do?
I think I would first and foremost go for the group. If I know that the group is very good, they're doing the research that's interesting to me, and if I see that, as we, like, many of the parameters that we discussed before are fitting really my work style and the things I'm looking forward to, then I would for sure go there. And to me, the university prestige is more of a secondary thing. And of course, you can also establish yourself in the smaller group, maybe in the smaller university, get very good experience and get the contacts within that smaller community. And then you can go to a bigger one, because there's no one stopping you from moving on to a new place.
Yeah. Also, you can help the place you join to become more known and reputable through your research. So you can change your own environment. People don't realize, but we do have a very strong influence on our groups and our environments with our academic endeavors. But you bring a good point. I think that in a research field, maybe the university doesn't have the highest reputation, but maybe the scientist whose group and the group you are joining is actually more known and prominent. So it really depends. Of course, joining a prestigious university will add a lot to your CV. I have seen that. Many people say, oh, that person is from there. When, you know, we assess applications for different positions, I've heard people being fascinated by prestigious universities in CVs. But I would say that as time progresses, it becomes less and less of a focus. And your research and your training and skills then come to the top. So don't let that dictate your choices.
And if you want to be known, like, outside and establish yourself as a public figure, I think in this day and age, it's so convenient with the social media, because if you even find yourself in a smaller community and in this not very famous university, you can make yourself more known by exposing your research and your knowledge on different social media platforms. I know, yes, Twitter is now suffering a crisis, but I mean, at least it used to be a very good platform for academics there's also Instagram, and people do different kinds of fun activities there. So there are other ways also to expose yourself and your research. So don't be limited to just the reputation of the university.
Absolutely. And it's very important, because when you engage in the social media world, you might think it takes from your time, but it's actually an essential part of networking, and you become known in a wider audience, and constant presence in a wider audience will make you being remembered. But that's a topic also for a different episode. Going back to what we were saying about how to meet the people, how to get to know them, and how to approach them. One thing I think it's worth mentioning, and we didn't discuss about, is that you can always say to a PI that before I accept, I would like to meet the group, and can I come there for a day or two? And maybe quite often they will be able to cover your expenses, so there's no shame in asking. But also, if you want to work with a group or two, and you're not certain which one will suit you better, try to get opportunities to do a small internship with each first. And that could be done either by applying for a small funding. So you can even contact them and say, is there any funding call I could apply for to come and work with your group as an intern? Or do you take interns? And some groups might already have the money. Many countries have funding organizations which can give this kind of small grants for like a 1 month internship.
Or even just go in there, for example, for your bachelor's thesis or master's thesis, something small. Usually it doesn't last more than just a few months. And then it can give you a nice taster of how the work goes or what the community is. And it doesn't oblige you as well to stay there for longer. So if by the end of your master's thesis, you think that it's not exactly the place you want to stay in, you can look for something else further. And some groups also keep you on a trial period for a few months, that sometimes PIs also want to see what you are and how do you work. And they can already keep you.
Absolutely. And don't let that scare you. And I couldn't stress more that when you go for an interview, just be yourself and be honest, because you don't want to surprise them later that they had met someone else at the interview and someone else appeared later in the group. I remember once when I was applying for PhDs, I was asked, because in science, you might end up doing a lot of programming. And I was asked, do I like it? And I said, I don't like it, but I do it if I have to do it. And so it was a perfectly acceptable answer. And I did get the position. I remember, well, I was offered the position. I didn't accept it. But I also remember at the same interview, they asked me what I know about the specific topic. And I was very honest. And I said, well, I had one course in my bachelor's that we covered, you know, the surface, the cream of the cake. Mm-hmm. So I know that much, but I can obviously learn. So, you know, of course, try to be relaxed. Don't be arrogant. Don't say, I can obviously learn. Just say, I'm happy to learn, because willingness is something that many PIs also look in their supervisees.
And just with all that we've discussed so far, and you probably have taken all the right steps, but there are so many things you can't predict. And you may find yourself that after all, this is not really the place for you and not the place where you want to work. And maybe the environment ended up being quite toxic and you didn't notice it from the beginning. Please don't be afraid to quit. And I think more people need to hear that. And the further you go, of course, the more difficult it will become. But your mental well-being is so much more important.
Exactly.
And sometimes you will save more time by letting it go than just sticking to it and suffering all throughout.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with what you just said, Anastasia. And I will also add that assess at which point you are in your PhD. There might be a group doing similar things who will be happy to tell you. And don't be afraid to be honest to the other group, saying, I had to leave my former group because I was A, B, C reasons. I had ABC reasons. So yeah, don't be afraid to be honest and do what's best for you in the end, because it's your career at stake.
And it's your life.
It is your life, yes. Yes. Thank you for pointing that out, Anastasia. And maybe we can leave the episode with that message.
Yes. I think we've said a lot already.
Yes, indeed, we do. Apologize if we sidetrack quite often. It might happen, and that's why it's important that
we warned you we were talkative.
Yes, we warned you were talkative. So if you listen, just give us some feedback. If you want to hear more about these topics, if you were happy, if there was something we didn't say and you believe it's important to share with the rest of the listeners, please do leave a comment on the episode and we will be happy to read through and improve based on that. This is just our first episode, so we might be a little bit yet not
wobbly
good in at it, but we hope to improve.
Yeah, we are in different social media, so it's easy to reach us on Instagram and Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, lots of kind of things. It's either the Science Basement Pod or the Science Basement itself, because we're a part of the big Science Basement community. So don't be shy, reach us out, and we'll definitely check all your comments and feedbacks.
Right, and for those who don't know, the Science Basement is a science communication organization here in Finland, but we have members from all over the world, and it's essentially a platform that can provide early career scientists from masters to early postdocs with an opportunity to get involved in different science communication and public outreach projects and get some experience in the process.
Including podcasts.
Including podcasting, yes. Yeah. So if you want to get involved, just get in touch.
With that said, let's wrap up.
Yes, it's a wrap.
Woo! See you soon.
See you in the next one. Bye-bye.
Bye.